Okay, we're going to start the Gemara. Last three words in the Samach Amud Bet. The Gemara has been discussing, the last two Mishnayot, discussed the issue of conditions that were placed within a Kiddushin. Right? Once we talked about it by Ketzef, we talked about it by land. Now the Gemara is talking about the third case. We're going to go on a tangent for a little bit, and then ask that we see two different dinim in a certain particular area of halacha, and we want to know, when it comes to Kiddushin, which area of halacha is it more like? Now the Gemara is going to start off. It says, "Gavei hekdesh tzan." We have a Mishnah by hekdesh. Hamakdesh sadeu b'shat ha-yovel. Someone who is makdesh his sadeh, his fields, during the time of the yovel, that the time that the yovel is no hay, not on the yovel itself, but the time that the yovel is no hay. Then there's a fixed redemption price. No matter what the true value of the field is, there's actually a fixed price for redemption. Is that notain b'zera chomer se'urim, right, the amount that we'll plant, right, of zera chomerim, chamishim shekel kesef. That's a fixed redemption rate based on the value of the land. You know, based on if you take a zera chomer se'urim, that's an area that plants a, right, the chomer se'urim. Within that area, every time you have an expanse that's that big, you pay 50 shekel kesef. Now, if it's makdish a field, but that field also hasn't, hayu nikayim amukim asarat fachim, has depressions in the land that are deeper than 10 fachim, oslaim gvoim asarat fachim, or it has, you know, rocks or areas that are high up, more than 10 fachim, ein nimdadim ima. They are not included, or they're not accounted for, along with the sadeh. Pachot mitan, if they are less than 10 fachim, then they are nimdadim ima. Now then, if they are less than 10 fachim, then they are counted with it. I mean, they're considered a part of the field.
In other words, they're not hektish if they're...
Okay, it's a very, very good question. Excellent question. Va'avinim ba. So the Gemara says, and we ask on this, Nehi debhadei ara lo kashu. Fine. Okay, so even if you say that these depressions or these hills, or these little mountains, are not included in the field, nikdashu ba'painam shayu. They should still be kodesh of their own account. I mean that they should at least gather it or have a form of kedusha. So let's say there's a chitim a kama d'lo havi beit kur. So what are you going to suggest? If it's not the size of a beit kur, then it does not qualify to be kodesh. Lo choshev. It's not significant enough to be kodesh. Very minu. Sadeh. Right? We have the word sadeh by sde achuza. Ma tamalomar. The fish nemar zerachom esorim bechamishim. I would think only if you were makdish that size of land would you be chayav to redeem it. Right? How do you know I include a letach? A letach is a chatzi kur, half a kur. B'chatzi letach, which would be a quarter of a kur. Sa'ah, we know there's 30 sa'ah in a kur. So a one sa'ah would be 1/30 a kur. Tarkav is three kavim. Three kavim, right, are half a sa'ah. So be half a sa'ah, which would be basically the equivalent of 1/60 of a kur. And then v'chati tarkav, right, would be the equivalent of 1/120 of a kur, because that's half of 3 kav, which would be 1.5 kav. 1.5 kav is, right, a kur is a, 1.5 kav would be 1/4 of a sa'ah. And we know again that a sa'ah is 1/30 of a kur, so that would be 1/120. V'afuga rova. Even rova hakav, right? Even 1/4 of a kav. So here, you're just expanding over and over again the size of the, right, the smallness of the field compared to what the Torah allows. I mean, how do you know that all of these are also kodesh? Tamadomar sadeh mikomakom, right? So that, amen. When it says sadeh, it means any sadeh. I mean, because the pasuk could have written had it not had the word sadeh in it, right? There, it talks about that you have to your makdish stay achuzato. So now, when you talk about stay achuzato, do you need the word sadeh there, or do you not? Because it said, v'im, you could have written, im mi achuzato yagdish ish. So why does it say, im stay achuzato? Stay comes to teach you that no matter what the size of the field is, it is kodesh. So based on this, right, the Gemara is now asking a question, right, what, we have these depressions in the land, these things that are mountains in the land, and you're makdish this field. Right, so now this, our way so far we have the Mishnah suggests that the main field is kodesh, but these that are higher than ten tefachim or lower than ten tefachim are not kodesh. So Gemara says, oh, maybe you want to suggest the reason they're not kodesh is because, right, they are too small. Gemara says, doesn't matter, because we see that size is irrelevant when it comes to becoming kodesh. Now, how does Gemara explain this? As Gemara answers, because it's a different answer now. It says what? Amar Marufa Barchama Hocha Binikaim Mleim Mayim Askinan. We're dealing with depressions that are full of water. Mishum, the lav, bnei zriyaninu. They're unplantable land. They're unusable land, and since they're unusable land, that's why they're not Kodesh. Right? Zekanami. I can prove it to you from the Lishon of the Mishnah. Why the Kani? Dumiya the Slaim Gvoim. It says the depressions are similar to the rocks. Right? And just Shmamina, what are rocks? Just like rocks are unplantable, unusable land. So too, the depressions that have water in them are unusable land. So now, at this point, right, when we say that in Nimzazim Yimah, they're not mentioned in it. So now, Svi asked a good question, right? What are the stages of the Gemara? If we simply read the Gemara here, it would sound like the stages of the Gemara are, first I have a Sadeh, I have a field that I'm being Makdish, that I give to Hekdesh. And now I want to know what's the status of the field. So we say, okay, the main, you know, plane of the field will be Kodesh. And then the Gemara has Avmi, the mission suggests if it's lower than 10 Tvachim or higher than 10 Tvachim, right, that wouldn't be Kodesh. Now when we say, does that mean it won't be Kodesh at all? Right, is that what the Gemara is thinking? Or is the Gemara thinking that, no, it'll be Kodesh, but not under the condition of Zerachom Mer Torim that gets redeemed at 50 shekel. And that's what Rashi says. When Rashi says that they're lav nezirio or that they're ending yamidim imah, right? Tosfos again mentions it also. You can't suggest that they're not kodesh at all. That's impossible because you were makdish the whole field. So the suggestion is that they actually will have a different status, which is mean. What does it mean a different status? Meaning that when you're makdish a seachuza, it has a fixed exchange rate. Meaning that whatever beit chomer teorim, right, which is a big kur of teorim, that is redeemed with 50 shekel. So now, if you are makdish these areas that have heights of 10 tefachim are lower than 10 tefachim, right? If we say they're not kodesh, it means that they're not kodesh to have that fixed rate. That means that if you come to redeem them, you have to redeem them at their true value. You have to actually take them out of their true value, and they won't be included under that general principle. The one says, why not? Why can't they be under that principle of the fixed exchange rate for a property, or fixed value for property? Why can't they be under that exchange rate? Because there is no size limitation on how small it is that you can get that fixed value. So where it says, I'll solve the problem, right? I will say that they are lav b'nei zriya ninhu. So again, Rashi suggests that when they say lav b'nei zriya ninhu, again, not that they're not kodesh at all, but rather they're not included in the fixed value which the Torah gave, which is that for a zerach homer silrim, you get pay 50 shekel. These will be assessed on their own merit and their own true value, because they don't qualify as a zera chomer silrim because they're not plantable. If they don't qualify, then they go to be regular hektesh. Regular hektesh gets exchanged for its true value. That's why I think you have to read the Gemara over here, right? That you have to suggest. For Tosfos and Rashi both suggest this, that not when the Gemara says not be hektesh, doesn't mean not be hektesh at all. That would be an impossible situation. But when it says not be hektesh, means not under this category of Zerach Chomer Serim for 50 shekel kesef. Not under the category where there's that fixed value rate, rather under just, you have to go and assess what the value of that area is. And the Gemara says, no, maybe it shouldn't be. And the Gemara goes back to it again and says, yes, because this is unplantable land, it's not included in that category. All right, now, continuing in the Gemara. Now the Gemara is going to bring down a different case, not with Hekdesh. Right, it says, Hanu, let's just see where we are. Iyaki, right? Afilu pachot nikein nami. So the Gemara says, okay, what about the fact, now you explain to me why when it's more than 10 tefachim, down or up, it's not included with the field. But why don't we say that if it's filled with water already, right, why don't we consider these to be, right, unplantable and not usable when it's less than 10 tefachim, right? Well, the Mishnah said that it's above 10 tefachim, then it's out. But if it's less than 10 tefachim, it's part of the plain of the land. But why is that? So Mar says, Hanun agane de aro mikru, shidru de aro mikru. That these are called, these little depressions in the land, right, are called like the cups of the land. Meaning that the water gathers there, like with the Yassim Agunot, but it's not so deep that you consider it to be a separate entity, but it's considered to be the natural flow of the land. And since the natural flow of the land, even if there's water in there, that's not considered to either make it unplantable or not part of the plain of the land. And also with the rocks. When the rocks are high of 10 tefachim, then they're considered to be out of the plain of the land. They're considered to be, let's call them mountains or little hills, right? Whereas when they are just forming small slopes along the way, that's considered to be like the shidra, like the spine of the land. Meaning like a spine, which you have a vertebrae on, it goes up and down a little bit. Even though it's a straight line, it has ups and downs on it. So too, the land has a little ups and downs. It's not always going to be exactly flat or flat plain. Part of the plain, part of the landscape, very good. So now, when it's more than 10 fachim, less than 10 fachim, then it's already a separate entity, right? It's a separate area, it's too deep to be considered as part of the land, or too high to be considered part of the land. So now the Gemara says, right, gabi mecher tnan, by mecher, by sales, by transactions, we have a Mishnah that says this, omer lechaveru beit kur afar ani mocher lecha. I am selling you a beit kur worth of land. Now, vayusham nikaim amukim asara tefachim, and then it has depressions that are deeper than 10 tefachim, oslaim gvoim asara tefachim, or rocks that are protruding out of the land more than 10 tefachim, ein nimdadim ima. They're not included in the beit kur that he promised to sell him. Pakot migan, less than that, nimdadim ima. Ba'amar makurkva ba'arma, and a makurkva ba'arma qualifies, apa pish eim leim ma'im, even if they're not filled with water. So my time, why is that? Amar Papa, Fishi in Adam Rotse, Shitin Motav, Bistachat, Vierlo Kishnaimish Losh Mekamot. First, is not willing to buy a field, right? That is a field that is supposedly one field, but looks like two or three fields. So here, the din is different. Between Hektesh and Mecha, the din is different. By Hektesh, what is the qualification for when it's considered one field or not one field? Has to do with the quote unquote plantability of that land. If the depression is more than 10 tefachim, or the tzela is more than 10 tefachim high, then those land, that parts of the land are considered unplantable, or not in the landscape of the land, and therefore, what they are not included in the zerach or merzorim for 50 shekel. But that's only, Rav Maariv Bar Chumah says, if they're filled with water, because that's what makes them unplantable when they're filled with water. Whereas by mecher, the qualification is not plantable or unplantable, it has to do with when a person, what's a person's mindset when they buy a field? When they buy a
normally dictated by the
norms of society. Right, so that, I think that's what Maruk was suggesting, that exactly. That the mindset of a person when he buys a field, he intends to buy a single field. He doesn't buy to play different areas where he can't plow them in one shot. But he has to actually go to a separate plowing, he has to do separate planting in these areas. He wants an area that's over a stretch that he can do in one shot. If he buys a field and it looks like two or three fields, that's not what what people normally think, that's not what people normally want. What?
You see it before you buy it.
So maybe he didn't. No, it's a case possibly where he didn't see it. He says, so I'm giving you a beit kur afar, I'm giving you a beit kur worth, and then right, he never sees it. And he thinks he's getting a beit kur, he shows up, and it's not what he thought. So we see the din is different by mecher. Mecher has to do with the mindset of the people, and therefore it doesn't have to be filled with water. Even if there's a depression without water, right, then it's considered to be out. It's considered to be not a single plain or a single field, whereas by hektesh you need to be unplantable to not be considered a single field. So now, the Gemara wants to know, by Kiddushin, what's the din? Right? I mean, does the din of Kiddushin more like Hektesh, or is it more like Mecher? Let's see, that's the Gemara's question now. So now, right, that's exactly, that's all background. I said this is all like a tangent to get into this question. Hakamai, what's the din here? Lehektesh medaminan, right? When it comes to Kiddushin, and he promises, I'm going to make Hektesh to Isha, right? I'm not, then I'm going to give you a Beit Kur Afar. That's our Mishnah, right? Now, which one is he considering? Like, is it like, right, hektesh, which means that it's considered a beit kur afar until it becomes unplantable, right? Or is it like mecher, which has to look like a single field? So, over mecher medamin la, do we consider like a transaction? Gemara says, mistavro lehektesh medamin la, right? Because, I tell you, it sounds like it's like hektesh. Why does it sound like hektesh? Damala, ana tarachno bezar ano maitina. We saw before that the Gemara said, what was the Havamina in the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that he says, I'm going to bring into the marriage a field that's in a certain location. And it turns out it's not in that location. The Mishnah says that the Kedushin fails. So Gemara says, what was the Havamina? Of course it's going to fail. He promised her a field here. Instead, he gives her a field in somewhere else. Gemara says, no, because maybe he would have proposed to her. Listen, what do you care? You want the produce of the field. You don't care where the field is. You want to bring home the produce. I'll go get the produce from wherever it is, and I'll bring it here. What do you have to worry about it? So we say there, that Kamash Malan, no, that he can't say that. But the fact that he says to her, well, that I can bring the produce back, or he can actually even make that such a claim, means that what are we focused on over here? We're focused on the production of the field, not on the way it looks during the sale. If you focus on production of the field, that's like hektesh. Hektesh has to do with the plantable area, the area that is usable, right? Not about whether it looks like one plane, it looks like one space. So Mar says that therefore we will compare it more to hektesh than we would to mecha. Alright, that's the end of this sugya. Now the new Mishnah. The new Mishnah deals with Tanai. Until now we've dealing with conditions, right? Then the Gemara is going to lay out framework. This is one of the major Mishnah throughout Shas that deals with this. What is the framework for when a person creates a Tanai? Right, when a person creates a condition, how does he create a condition inside of an action or outside of an action or a transaction? So we say, what the paradigm, what's the paradigm for a Tanai, for a condition is? Tanai, B'nai, Gad, or B'nai, Ruvain, right? The condition that Moshe considered with B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, that if they will go, Chalutzim L'Sinei HaTzavah, they go before the Jewish army into the mainland of Eretz Canaan, then they'll be entitled to inherit, right, the land that is, Me'ever HaYarden, the land of Ever HaYarden. So that is the paradigm for all Tanaim that we use. Now, within Tanai B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, there are actually a number of items come out of them. Three of them are very core to it. One is the requirement for Tanai Kaful. Right, the requirement that has to be a double Tanai. A double Tanai means that you must have to state the positive ramifications and the negative ramifications of it. Number two that comes out of them is that the Tanai has to be kodim l'maaseh. The condition, the Tanai, must precede the action. Meaning that the action itself, once one has done the action, then to then try to put a Tanai, a condition in it, is like trying to reverse an action afterwards. That you can't do. So the Tanai must precede, right, the action. That's one more. And the third thing that you learn out from there is that a hain has to be called in the lab. The positive has to be before the negative. And the positive formulation has to precede the negative formulation. Those are the three basic items that I learned out. Other places in Shas, the Gemara learned actually additional items. Alright? These are additional items that are learned in these other locations, like we had it in Gittin together. Actually, that what? That Tanai and the Maisa have to be Dover Echad. That the Tanai and the Maisa have to be in the same category, in the same, about the same issue. That the condition can't be about something irrelevant to the action. It has to be relevant to the action itself. That we have in the Gemara Gittin. Also, other places, like in Nizarim, I think we have an Efshar L'Kaimel Yedei Shliach. It has to be a Tanai that can be done by an agent. Also possibly accomplished through agency and not just by the individual themselves. So all these other conditions that the Gemara brings up in other places in Shas, generally we find Amoraim who argue against them, and we do not paskin like those conditions that come out of them. The three main ones, right, we generally do. That was a good question. The Rambam actually paskins that there are four conditions. He brings the three from Tanai, Be'ei, Gad, and Ruvain, brings a fourth condition, which is that it must be a Tanai, She'efshar L'Kayemo. It has to be a condition that you have the ability to fulfill. Meaning that if it's an impossible Tanai, then the Tanai is irrelevant, it's not, as if there is no Tanai there. And when you make the condition, it has to be a condition that has possibility of accomplishment, because if not, then the person's just, you're going to say, he's joking around, it's not a real condition, and it might still stand without
the
Tanai. Right, okay, so that's the four things that the Rambam says. Not everybody necessarily agrees that fourth thing, right, Rambam claims that comes out of Tanai, B'nai Gad, B'nai Ruvain. Truthfully, it's not so clear that that's the source for that issue, and that the Tosfos HaZaken in here actually discusses that the Rambam really only gets those three from Tanai, B'nai Ruvain, and gets the Shalakaimo for somewhere else. Now, why is it? We discussed this a little bit in Gittin, when we went to this in Gittin. I have two possibilities. When I have a Tanai and a Maisa, and I mess up the Tanai, I mess up the condition somehow. Right now, what are the two possibilities? I could say that the Tanai falls away, and the Maisa stands. The action stands, and the condition is irrelevant, and then the condition goes through. Or, I could suggest that when my intention was for the Tanai to go through, I said it wrong, and because I said it wrong, it means that I really don't want to have this action work out, and therefore the whole thing falls apart. We see throughout Shas, that the Gemara says the Tanai falls away, and the Maisa stays. Right, so why? Why is it that the Tanai falls away?
I mess up the Tanai.
Right? I mean that I don't do it as a Tanai couple. I don't do it as a hanging for life. I don't think
not in my attempt to be Mekayim.
Right, no. I'm sorry, that the person who establishes the Tanai, right, doesn't
in verses 4. In other words, once you did it, right, you got whether you evade the Tanai or not.
Right. So now once you've set out a Tanai, now you didn't do it in the framework that's set out by Chazal. What happens now? Does the Tanai just disappear and the Maisa stands and there's no condition? Or we say that messes up everything, meaning that everything is irrelevant now because you tried to do something, you failed, so the whole thing fails. So again, throughout Shas, the Gemara says the Maisa stands, the Tanai falls away. Throughout Shas.
It's not a package.
Right. It's not a condition on the Tanai that either you do it. We saw in Gittin, right, some possibilities that it would fall apart, but throughout Shas and throughout the Bishonim, it's always that the Tanai falls away. Why? Why did the Tanai fall away? That's because Tosfos mentions in some places that it's a chiddush. Tanai is a chiddush. The fact that you can create a condition against the Maisa, the action, of course the action goes through. The fact that you can actually premise or withhold the action or hold back the action with a condition of some sort means that you are like either through dibur or makshava, right, are able to somehow reverse an action or hold back an action. So that's a chiddush. Therefore, when it comes to a choice of what's going to fail, when we see that the tonight it wasn't done right or in proper form, we're going to say that that maisa, that's easy to understand. That always goes through. That's the simple part. The fact that you can condition or create a condition around that maisa, that is something that is a chiddush. So since it's a chiddush, if you fail at it, then that's just going to fall away and the maisa will stand. That's a general way to view it. We also saw earlier in this, Masechta and Kiddushin, we also saw about Tnai. Where do we see that? Tnai Kopo, and the requirements for Tnai Kopo is a machlokus between Tofo and the Rashbam. Right? The Rashbam believes that the Tnai Kopo and the requirements of Tnai B'nai Gadar Ruvain, he says it's in Baba Basra, because we quoted it over here, but he says in Baba Basra, only apply Isurim. Does it require Tnai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain? Only by things that are Isur. So you require it by Mamon, it's not relevant. Tnai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain arrives. Tofo went the other way around, so that's the question from Eretz Yisrael. Tanai B'nai Gadar Ruvain is about dividing up the land of Eretz Yisrael, right? So the Tanai B'nai Gadar, that's a monetary matter. How could the Rashbam say that it doesn't apply to monetary matters? So Tosfos...
The Rashbam
said, right, oh, very good. So I heard from Rabbi Sachs, name Rabbi Sachs, that right, that's exactly what the Rashbam believes, that right, the division of Eretz Yisrael has a din of this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and because of that, there's also Easter involved. And if there's Easter involved, so therefore there's Tanai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain. Tosfos went the other way around, that it only applies to Dine Memononos. It only applies to monetary matters if there's Tanai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain. By Easter, there is no Tanai Gadar B'nai Ruvain. There's no issue of Tanai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain. We also saw both in the Rashbam and Tosfos that the requirement for Tanai comes in different levels. There are some things that are obvious, that you don't even have to state the Tanai, that even, you don't have to say anything, you have to think anything, because, right, it's so obvious that what you're doing is premised on that condition. Right, we saw it in the Gemara. There's the next level, which is that you don't have to formulate it like the Tanai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain, because your action is mochiach a little bit, but with a little statement you can make it clear that it's what you're doing. Remember when we talk about someone who's selling his land to leave Eretz Yisrael, right? So if he just says, that's why I'm selling it, that's enough to make that the premise or the condition of the sale. He doesn't have to lay it out like it's Tanai B'nai Gadar B'nai Ruvain. We had other conditions where a guy's giving away all his property because he thinks he doesn't have a child, and then he finds out that he has a child, we say it's clear. There he doesn't have to say anything. It was clear he was giving away the property to other people because he had no children. But he finds out that he does have a child, then we reverse the transaction even though he stated nothing. Right now, there's a last category where you must make a Tanai because it's not obvious that that's a condition in the sale. That must be formulated properly like Tanai B'nai Gadar U'B'nai Ruvain. Alright, that's just some background to this Mishnah. Alright, let's go through the Mishnah. Tomorrow it's a little bit difficult, but we'll move through it. There's Rashi and Tosfos argue a lot about through this Mishnah, so we'll try to explain it according to Rashi and then come back and explain a little bit according to Tosfos. The Mishnah says, Rimeir Omer, Kol Tanai, She'enu Tanai B'nai Gadar U'B'nai Ruvain, Eino Tanai. That's it. This is the paradigm for all Tanayim. It must be done this way. That's what Rimeir says. She'ne'amar V'yomer Lehem Imyar Bu B'nai Gadar U'B'nai Ruvain. It says, if you do it, then you'll get a very ordained. If you don't do it, you won't get it. Rabbi Chanina argues, I'm sorry. The reason that Moshe had to double it up was because it was necessary. You would come to the wrong conclusion. Had Moshe not doubled the Lashon, you would have come to the wrong conclusion. Why? Had it not been then, because what's the possibility? The possibility is, Moshe says to him, listen, if you go in front of the rest of the Klal Yisrael and you conquer the land, you will get your Eivar Yardin. Now, had I said nothing else, what would happen? What would you have thought? What would you have thought if they didn't go and conquer the land with the rest of Bnei Yisrael? Right, they get nothing. They don't get Eivar Yardin because they didn't fulfill their condition there. And in Eretz Canaan, they don't get anything because they didn't go. They weren't doing what you said. They'll get nothing at all. If you made the positive statement of simply, if you go into the land to conquer the land, you get a very hard day. Right. So now, it says nothing more. Right. Now, what happens if they don't go? Right? So your assumption that Rabbi Chanina says is, they would get nothing, because they get nothing in a very hard day, and then Eretz Canaan, they weren't involved with, so they don't get that either. So they get zero. Right. Therefore, Moshe must come and make a second statement, which is, if you don't go Chalutim, you're entitled to divide in the regular Eretz Canaan. You'll inherit in Eretz Canaan. So Rabbi Chanina says the second statement, the negative formulation, is necessary because you would have come to the wrong conclusion without that negative statement. So from that, I cannot prove that you need a Tanai Kaful. The necessity for a Tanai Kaful here was because you would have come to the wrong conclusion without the Tanai Kaful. But that shouldn't stand a standard for all Tanayim. That's what Rabbi Chanina says over here. Rabbi Shaul is saying is correct, that's exactly what Rabbi Chanina believes, that may hain atashumay alav and alav atashumay hain. You can infer from what negative to the positive to the negative, and assumes that you can infer it. If you cannot infer it, then you have to state it explicitly. Right? It's Tzarek HaDevel HaMoshi, Malay Ken Yeshu Mashiach Filer Tzkanam Lo Yinkalu. Machlok is Rashi and Tosfos here. Right? Rashi says that Rabbi Chanina only argues on Tznai Kaful. He only argues on one thing, this one issue. He believes that Tznai Begad Ruvain, the requirements of Hain before the Lav, that the Tznai is before the Maisa, he agrees to Rabbi Meir. He only disagrees of the requirements of Tznai Kaful. That's what Rashi says. Tosfos says no, that he argues on all three points of Rabbi Meir. He argues entirely on the whole position that Tznai Begad Ruvain is a paradigm. He says it's not a paradigm, and therefore we learn none of the issues out of Begad Ruvain. Now, Mar says, Shafir Kamalei Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Chanina has a very strong case against Rabbi Meir. It's true. So Amar Rabbi Meir, no. Isak adatcha lav the tnai kaful dehu da'ata. Had you thought it was coming not to establish a tnai kaful, lichtov im lo yavru v'nochazu b'tochachem. Should have just written, if you don't go over, if they don't go chalutzim, if they don't go before the rest of the army, then they will inherit with you. So now wait, there's an extra word here. Be'eretz Kanan lamali. Why does the Torah add the extra word of Eretz Kanan in there? It didn't need to write that. It's not necessary. So that's Shema Minot. That's what Rabbi Meir said. That comes to teach me that the requirement of Tznai Kaful Hu Da'ata. Tell you that you must have a Tznai Kaful. Now how does Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel deal with that? How does he deal with the fact that it could have just said Nochozu B'Tokachem? And now it also says, right, Be'eretz Kanan. So he says, Rabbi Chanina says, no. Ilo Katav Rachmana Be'eretz Kanan. Had it not written Eretz Kanan, Hava Amina. This would have been my first thought. V'Nochozu B'Tokachem Be'eretz Gil'ad. Right, that they will, what? I would have read the face like this. They will inherit along with you in Eivar Yardin, in Eretz Zichon and Og. So that, instead of getting the whole Eivar Yardin, they will get their proportional part of Eivar Yardin, of Zichon and Og's area. But, of all Eretz Kanan Kalal, lo, they will not be entitled to anything inside of Eretz Kanan, meaning that they are totally knocked out of Eretz Kanan. The question is only about Eretz Gilad, the Eretz on the Eivar Yardin. Two possibilities. One possibility is that they inherit the entire part of Eivar Yardin. The other possibility is that they don't fulfill what Moshe said. It just says, that they would get their proportional amount of it with the other Shvatim. They would divide it up and they'd get their portion of it. But in Eretz Kanan they get nothing. So therefore the puzzle comes and says, Eretz Kanan, that they do have entitlement to share in Eretz Kanan. The way Rashi learns this is, what? The one possibility is if they go in front of the army, then they get the entire Eivar Yardin. If they don't go in front of the army, right? Then the Havamina was that they'd only get their proportional side of Eivar Yardin. The conclusion, according to Rabbi Chanina, is that not only do they get their proportional part of Eivar Yardin, they also get their proportional part of Eretz Kanan. So Tosfos asks on Rashi, Rashi suggests that even, basically, if they sit at home, this is amazing, they sit at home, what's going to happen? They're going to sit at home now, and then they're going to get a portion of Eretz Tichon and Oak, and they will also get a portion of Eretz Kanan, though they did nothing to conquer Eretz Kanan. They weren't even a part of the conquering of Eretz Kanan. But now, according to the way Rashi is learning, it's going to be that they get a portion of Eretz Kanan. Therefore, Tosfos says that's not the condition. The condition is not, do they go in front of the army, do they sit at home? But it's rather that they're definitely going to battle in Eretz Kanan. The only question is, are they in front of the army? Are they chalutzim? Or are they in the back like everybody else? Right? Are they in the back? So if they go chalutzim right in before, you would have thought, what? Then they get, right, then they get all of Eivar Yardin. Right, if they went with the rest of the people, the rest of the Shvatim, then they'd only get their proportional part of Eretz Gilad, but they'd get none of Eretz Kanan. Kamash Lon, that they get a portion of Eretz Kanan, because they actually fought for it, they were fighting for it. Problem with Tosfos Shad is, what's the Hav mean that they don't get a piece of Eretz Kanan? They're fighting for it. Why should they get their representative proportion of Eretz Kanan? Even though they're not going Kalutzim, they're still fighting for it. So Tosfos says that's because that when Moshe divided up, he was Maskia them from Eretz Kanan. He says, look, this is your area, every Yardin is yours. You are now no longer entitled to anything in Eretz Kanan. Right? And then when they go and fight there, they have no entitlement to anything when they fight there. But that's the Kamash Milan, is that you do have an entitlement. If you go and fight, even if you're not Kalusim, you have your proportional entitlement in Eretz Kanan. But in the end, they do go in front of the army and they get the entire Eivar Yardin, and therefore the other side of it is not relevant. The side that they don't go in front of the army is not relevant. They get nothing in Eretz Kanan, and they get an entire Eivar Yardin. They fulfill the condition. The Rabbi Meir, what does Rabbi Meir say about this? The Tochachem. Betochem means everywhere that you are. Everywhere that you are, it's both Eretz Gilad and Eretz Kanan. So the Eretz Kanan is extraneous. If it's extraneous, that comes to teach me Tznai Kaful, according to Rabbi Meir.
Tanya, I'm a Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is the opinion in our Mishnah who said that without the kfelut of the Lashon, without the doubling of Lashon by Moshe, we would have thought that B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain, if they failed to keep their side of the tenai of their condition. For instance, they didn't go in chalutzim lifnei hatzava. They didn't go into Eretz Yisrael in front of the army. Then they would not only not be entitled to a portion in the Eretz Gilad, they'd also be entitled to no portion in Eretz Canaan. So therefore, Moshe had to double the Lashon to teach us that not only do they get a portion in Eretz Gilad, they also get a portion in Eretz Canaan. So that's Rabbi Chanina's position. Now he brings a mashal to show you what his position is like. L'mada v'ardume. Adam she'a mechalik nechasev levanav. A person was distributing his property to his children. Amar ploni b'ini yirash sedeh plonit. My first child, you will get such and such a field. O ploni b'ini yirash sedeh plonit. My second child, you'll get such and such a field. O ploni b'ini, my third child, yitain matayim zuz. In order for you to inherit your property, or the property that I've designated for you, you have to pay up 200 zuz, v'yirash sedeh plonit, and you'll get the property I've allocated for you. V'im lo yitain. But now he formulates it not only in the positive, but also now in the negative. V'im lo yitain, yirash mechav, v'shar nechassim. So now, if he does not give the 200 zuz that he was supposed to give, then he will inherit with his brothers. So where it says, migarum leyirash mechav, v'shar nechassim, what causes him, or gives him the ability to inherit with the rest of his brothers in the other materials, kefilo, karamlo, the double lashon that the father used. So again, let's think about this. There are two options here. The father is distributing his property, and then he goes to each son. Two of the sons get property without having any preconditions associated with them. They get their property, they divide up the property that the father assigns to them. On the other hand, the third son has a precondition to his receiving or receipt of the property. That precondition is that, or that tenai is that he must pay up 200 zuz. So now we have two options. Either he does pay up to 200 zuz. If he pays up to 200 zuz, then he gets the property that was designated for him by his father. And the other two brothers will divide up the remaining property, or the property that was designated for them. What happens if he fails to pay the 200 zuz? So from the mashal that Rabbi Chanina brought down, it sounds like if he fails to pay the 200 zuz, for sure he has a portion in the property that his father designated for him, solely for him. Had he paid up the 200 zuz, he would have gotten the whole property. Now that he doesn't pay up the 200 zuz, he gets a portion of that property and divides it with his brothers. In addition to that, he will also get a portion of the remaining property that his two brothers have, because since he didn't get his own unique piece, he now also inherits or joins in with them. But from the mashal, or what you see from the mashal, is that the property that was designated for him, either he gets the whole or a part of it. The doubling of the lashon also helps him to inherit the additional piece that belonged to his brothers. So on this, the Gemara says, how could you, this is not comparable to our Mishnah. Why is this? Our Mishnah and this mashal are not in congruence. Why not? Hatam k'tani, by the Mishnah it says, Rabbi Chanina's opinion, Mishnah, Yesh b'mash Moshe filu b'eretz Kanan lo yinchalu. Had Moshe not doubled the tenai, then we would have thought not only do they not inherit right in Eretz Gilad in Eivar Yardin, but also they do not inherit in Eretz Canaan. Meaning, had Moshe not doubled his lashon, the Bnei Gad Reuven, had they failed to keep their part of the tenai, would have received nothing at all. So Moshe's statement that doubles the tenai comes back and tells us not only do they get part of Eretz Gilad, but they also get part of Eretz Canaan. So the Havamino, and then the Maskana, based on the Moshe's doubling of the Lashon of the Tanai, teach us that had they fulfilled their Tanai, they would have gotten Eretz Eivar Yardin, Eretz Gilad, and the rest of the Shvatim would have divided Eretz Canaan. We thought, had Moshe said nothing more, we couldn't have inferred anything from that, and we would have thought that if Bnei Gad Reuven failed to keep their commitment, then they do not get anything in Eretz Gilad, and they get nothing in Eretz Canaan. Comes along Moshe Rabbeinu and says, no, that even if they fail to keep their side of Tanai, they get their representative portion in Eretz Gilad, and also their representative portion in Eretz Canaan. But that's not what the Mashal says. The Mashal, on the other hand, does not say that there was any doubt as to the property that was designated for the particular son who was supposed to pay the 200 zuz. As opposed to our Mishnah, which seems to assume that if there was, had they failed to keep their commitment, they would get nothing in Eretz Gilad and nothing in Eretz Canaan. Nothing in the property that was designated for them and nothing in Eretz Canaan, which was designated for the other brothers. So if you were to have a Mashal that was to be equal or similar to that, you would have suggested that without the doubling of the father's statement, they would have gotten, this brother would have gotten no portion in the designated property for him and no portion in the property that was designated for his brothers. So the Mashal and the Mishnah are not congruent. They don't necessarily speak to the same case. Gemara says, Alma Kfeilo Eretz Gilad Nami Mahani. The fact that Moshe doubles Lashon entitles Bnei Gad and Reuven not only to get a little pure portion in Eretz Canaan, which would be the equivalent of getting a portion in the property of the other two brothers, but also it helps for Eretz Gilad. It helps them to get a portion in Eber Yardane, which would have been the equivalent of saying that this brother also gets a portion of the property that was designated for him. But the Mashal does not address that. V'hochetani mi garam lo liyareish imechav. The only thing the doubling of the father's Lashon helps is to inherit with his brothers b'shar nechassim. Kfeilo garam lo. Alma l'kfeilo l'shar nechassim ho. That the doubling of Lashon is only for the property that is designated for the brothers, but the property that was designated for him, t'kimahani, that's what it helps for, but the property that was designated for him is automatically assumed to be part of his distribution, and he'll split that even with his brothers. So when it says, Lokasha. Ha, mekami de name alay, Rabbi Meir, v'nechazuba, betochachem. Halabata de name alay, Rabbi Meir, v'nechazuba, betochachem. So now, Rabbi Meir, if you remember, Rabbi Meir went through different stages. The Gemara asked on Rabbi Meir's position, Rabbi Chanina has a great claim. Without the doubling of the Lashon, then for sure, we wouldn't have known that Bnei Gad and Reuven get a portion here. So Rabbi Chanina has a good claim against Rabbi Meir. What was Rabbi Meir's answer to him? Rabbi Meir's answer to him is no. The pasuk says, "Vin nochazu betochachem," that they will get a portion with you. So then, once you have a nochazu betochachem, that tells you that they will get a portion along with you. Then, be'eretz Canaan, the addition of the extra words of Eretz Canaan are extraneous, and that's from that extraneous lashon of Eretz Canaan. That's what Rabbi Meir learned out Tnai Kaful. Rabbi Hanina's response to Rabbi Meir, after we go through that stage of the Gemara, is Rabbi Hanina says, no, had I known v'nechazu betochachem, what would I would have thought? I would have thought then that they were only entitled to a portion of Eretz Gilad, meaning that nechazu betochachem means that they will get their representative portion, their proportional piece of Eretz Gilad, of Eber Yarden. But in Eretz Canaan, they would have gotten nothing. Therefore, Moshe adds in the word Eretz Canaan to teach us, not only do they get their representative portion in Eretz Gilad and Eber Yadin, but they also get it in Eretz Canaan. Now, the Mashal is similar. I mean, that the Mashal is not the original position of Rabbi Hanina as we thought in the Mishnah, but it's really after we ask the question of Rabbi Meir, what's Rabbi Meir's position really? Because Rabbi Hanina has a strong question against him. Once we got to that next stage, then we also amended Rabbi Hanina's position. And Rabbi Hanina's position is that, we have two extra Lashonot. We have the extra Lashon of Nechazu B'tochachem and of Eretz Canaan. So in that stage, Rabbi Hanina believes that had Moshe just said Nechazu B'tochachem, then we would have believed that Reuben and Gad would get their portion, proportional part of Eber Yarden, but they would have been excluded from Eretz Canaan. The addition of Eretz Canaan entitles them also to a portion of Eretz Canaan. So too over here, had the father just said that the distribution goes to the different brothers as he set it up, then we would have been certain that he gets this third brother who has a condition tied to his receiving the land, would have gotten his proportional share of that third piece. Only the addition of the father's kfeilut, which says that if it fails, he fails to pay the money, then he will share with his brothers. From that we know that he also gets a portion with the brothers. Just like by Reuven and Gad, they now also get a portion within Eretz Canaan.
Okay, Bishlam, other Rabbi Meir, this makes sense, Rabbi Meir, Zechtiv, right, by Kain, it says, Im Tetiv Se'et, Vim Lo Tetiv, L'Chetah Chatat Roveh. That if you do good, then we'll take care of your sins. If you don't do well, then you can end up in Gehenna. So why do you have to double it? According to Rabbi Meir, makes sense, right? Rabbi Chanina, Lama Leit. Why do you have to make the negative formulation? Sa'kadat Chaminim Tetiv Agra. If you do good, you'll get reward. Im Lo Tetiv, if you don't do good, Lo Agra, Lo Dina. You won't get any reward, but you also won't get punished. It'll be neutral. Nothing will happen to you. The Kamash Malan, that the negative formulation tells you no, that it's not good, that you get punished. Not only is it not no reward, no punishment. Bishlam Remir Hainu Tichtiv by Avraham Avinu, when he sends out, right, Eved Abraham to go get a wife for Rivka, it says, by Yom Avraham, those Kamei Tom Mashubach HaShalot, Simcha Nar Tachad Rechi, the Ashbiacha, this is the Shua. By Hashem Elokei Hashemayim Zart, Asher Lo Tikach, Isha Livni, Beno Tachani, Asher Anokhi Yoshevi Kirbo. Don't take a wife for Yitzchak from the Canaanite women. Ki, go to my homeland, back to my birthplace, and get me a wife for Yitzchak. Right? What happens? Then the Eved asks, what happens if she doesn't want to come along? Then Avram says that if he's not willing to come along, then tinakem alati, you'll be freed of the shuah. So we actually have three formulations here. One is don't take from the Bnei Eretz Canaan. Number two is take specifically from, right, my family. And number three is if they're not willing to come to you, then the shuah drops away. So Mara wants to know. So now, Why do I need the specific statement that Abba makes that if she's not willing to come with you, you're cleared of the shuwa? That should be obvious. You need to take a shuwa, go to my family and get a woman. If the woman doesn't come, it's obviously that's Tinah Melatit. What do I have to say that for? Why do we need that kaful, that doubling? The Israel. If it's good for her and not good for them, meaning that she's willing to come but her family says no, might be Baal Korchayu, right? Then we could bring her against her will. We'll bring her against the will of her, right? Her family, the rest of her family. Kamash Malan, the Kamash Malan is even Tove Haisha, right? That if the Kamash Malan, that even, what? If the relatives refuse, that's enough to get you out of the Shua. Imlo Tove Haisha, then what about if the woman refuses to come Lomali? Ifra, Sakhadah Hekhad Nechid Lahu. What happens if the family's willing to send her, right? Below Nechid Lah, and she's not willing to go? We'll bring her against her will, right? And then again, Kamash Malan, that he's freed of the Shavua. So these two things that Rabban says the Shavua will go away, right? Either if the woman refuses, or if the family refuses, you'll be cleared from, right? Cleared from the Shavua. So according to Rechinia, that's why he had to free him of the Shavua that way. What would have been if he didn't free him from the Shavua?
So Rashi suggests that had it not been for the doubling or the releasing of the Shua by Abraham, then we would have believed the first Shua that Abraham made Eliezer take was Loti kachisha livni mi b'not haKnani, so that there is a restriction against taking a Canaanite woman for Yitzchak. In addition to that, Abraham told Eliezer that he must now go to his family, meaning to Abraham's family, and find a woman from Abraham's family. Now, if according to Rashi, if Abraham did not release Eliezer from the original Shvua, which is the Shvua not to take a woman from Benot Canaan, that would suggest that even if Eliezer went to Abraham's family and they refused to give Abraham a wife or a woman to be the wife of Yitzchak, that when he returns empty-handed, that the restriction of Benot Canaan would still be in place. I mean, that won't be wiped out, because you can't infer anything from the fact that Abraham instructed him to go to his family. If you inferred from that, it says, well, if the woman doesn't want to come back, then you're freed of the Shvua to go to my family. But that doesn't necessarily free you of the Shvua that you can't take a woman from Benot Canaan. Implicit in Rashi is that now that Abraham releases Eliezer from the Shvua, he says that if the woman refuses to come with you, Tinaki, that you'll be freed, means freed of the original Shvua, the Shvua that you may not take a wife from Benot Canaan, which according to Rashi suggests that now, if Eliezer comes back empty-handed without a wife from Abraham's family, that he would be permitted to take a wife for Yitzchak from Benot Canaan. Tosfos is unwilling to accept this. He says it can't be. There's no way that Abraham intended for a release of the Shvua, a release of the Shvua of Benot Canaan, by his saying that if Eliezer doesn't find a woman who's willing to come with him, that would release him from the original Shvua of Benot Canaan. Therefore, Tosfos brings, actually, from the Rabbi Yitzchak, that he thinks that there are actually two Shvuot over here. One Shvua is that you may not take a woman from Benot Canaan. In addition to that, there is another Shvua that he must take a wife from Abraham's family. And then his diuk, or his proof to that, is that when Abraham says in the end that you'll be freed of the Shvua, it says, Nikita Mishvua Zot, that you'll be freed from this Shvua. This Shvua meaning the second Shvua, that you must take a woman from my family. But not that you'll ever be freed of the Shvua not to take a woman from Benot Canaan. So therefore, according to Tosfos, right, the restriction on Eliezer or Eved Avraham to take a woman from Benot Canaan stays in place no matter what. Eved Avraham is never released from that requirement. The second Shvua, the Shvua that Avraham says, go to my family and then take the woman, and if she refuses to come with you, then you are freed from the Shvua. With the additional Lashon, Lo Toveh, that Lashon comes to teach us that even if their refusal is only partial. So therefore, according to Tosfos, Rabbi Chanina needs the psukim, or the doubling of the Lashon, one by Abraham himself, it says, Vim Lo Toveh Aisha Lelech Recharech V'Nikita Mishvuati. And later on, also, when Eliezer is recounting the story about what he's supposed to do, he says there, Az Tina Kemi Alati, Kitavo Mishpachti, Lo Itnu Decha V'Itanaki Me'alati. So again, twice the Torah is recounting or says the release of the Eved Avraham from the requirement to go to Avram's family, but the release is worded differently in each instance. In one instance, it says, "Im lo tove ha'isha," and the second instance, when Eliezer is telling about it, says, "When the mishpacha will reject it." So from that, we learn that not a total and utter rejection, both by the woman and the family, is necessary to release Eved Avraham from the Shavua, But rather, either a refusal by the woman or a refusal by her family will be sufficient to release Eved Avraham from the Shivua.
Right, that if you do well and you listen, good. If you refuse, umuritim, and you rebel, then this and this. Why do I have to double it? It's trick again. If you do what I say to you, things will be good. If you don't do it, things just won't be good, but they won't be bad either. Right? That not only is it, if not only would not be good, but if you don't do it, it'd also be bad. Okay, we'll stop over here.